Hey everybody, it's Cam here. Today we're going to talk about Master of the Void by Wend Raven. It is a SPIFBO 9 finalist, was published just this year, and comes in at 585 pages long. It wins the SPIFBO competition for the coolest author name with Wend Raven. We'll talk about how I feel about the book coming up. I've mentioned before that aside from these SPIFBO books, almost every book that I will review, except for some of like the biggest name books, potentially will always be books that I'm basically recommending to you when I do the review for it. This book has a couple of things that I really didn't like, has some things that worked very well. What I will definitely say, though, is that as for a general reader, I would be far more surprised if this book is in the bottom five and not the top five of the SPIFBO competition. It is an epic fantasy, has a lot of the elements that many people would like if you're reading an epic fantasy, and I'm excited to talk about it. Once again, if you like these videos, please like and subscribe to my YouTube channel, and it'll just help me continue to grow and move forward here. As per usual, I think that I've got a pretty good system down now of how we're going to break the books down. I'm going to do the book blurb, and then we'll get into the plot, the world, the characters, the bad, the good, and my thoughts. Here we go. In the Seven Lands, magic is everything. So what happens when you're the only person who has none? Nothing matters more to Darius Mendy than forging a better life for his family by pursuing a formal magical education at the university, something his parents have sacrificed what little they had to make possible. When disaster strikes on the eve of his 13th birth moment, the day he was to receive his magical gift from the stars, will he choose perseverance or bitterness as he struggles against a society that would rather forget he exists than help him succeed? As the third son of an archmage, Ormund Laedas has spent his life living up to the expectations of others. When his testing goes terribly wrong, he must decide who he truly is when his carefully crafted upbringing is rendered useless. Setting off on an epic adventure of self-discovery, Ormund must find his place in the world before a looming evil destroys everything he holds dear. From swashbuckling sea voyages and magical heists to unlikely friendships and budding romances, Master of the Void is a sweeping coming-of-age journey that follows a cast of misfit friends through times of heartbreak, fear, joy, laughter, failure, and triumph. Okay, the book blurb itself shows two of our main characters and also will help us break down the world a little bit. Also, I momentarily forgot that I wasn't doing just a podcast, and I was still looking at my notes as I finished talking there. So this is a super cool magic system and the way that basically everyone breaks down in this world. One thing about this world, we see a lot of different places within it. The empire that we're going to start off with is the Sidarians. I guess that's how you say it properly, S-Y-D-A-R-I-N. They are currently ruled by a druid council. They're supposed to be to deal with consensus. There's been a civil war not too long in the past before, we got to where we currently are. The Sidarians are bordered by the Tizrians, T-I-Z-R-I-N, on one side that they're antagonistic with. Out in the ocean, we get to another place called the Rolawi. They were very Hawaiian sounding with their names and just living on the islands. So I'm going to describe how magic works within the Sidarian lands because that's where it's described to us in the first place. So you are born, and this is the case for everybody, under the sign of a star. Those stars are going to influence what of the six types of magic you're going to be able to use. You only get to use one of the classifications, at least within the Sidarian lands. You're going to need to learn runes and you're going to need to learn how to like incantations and things like that in order to really become powerful. So that's important because, as we talked about one of the characters, in the book blurb, Darius, he is poor and it's going to be very hard for him to get into that university and learn to truly become a mage. So everyone can use magic, but with the Sidarians, you're only considered a mage if you're trained to like your fullest extent of your ability. The six types of magic are pretty cool. Each one is self-contained. I'll describe those real quick. They have a color that they're assigned as well. So there's the six are energy. So energy means like you can use lightning. You can power things electrically. They're assigned yellow. There's fire mages. You know, I actually don't remember if those were red or orange. I'll put a graphic up once I do the post production, and then I'll have the proper color for it. Earth mages are brown. They can do anything from like helping figure out where ore is to actually like raising earthworks. There's life. They can heal people. They're green. Mind mages. So they can, powerful ones can actually, you know, make people do what they want. Other ones can read your mind. They're indigo or purple. So then the last one is water mage. So water mages, very powerful ones. So Oramund's mother is very powerful. She can actually influence the weather in an area. So the town he grows up in is known as being especially rainy. That is because of her bad moods, that she's not trying to control herself. And so she brings more rain than should be normal versus, you know, what the topography would say. So each of the mages, they can potentially become very powerful, but the average person is not going to be all that powerful within the Sidarian Empire because they don't have the proper training. And we're going to see, like, the Rolawi, their magic works very different than the Sidarians does. So we do know that it's possible to use magic in a different way than what, you know, we see to start off with, just based off of where you grow up. So we're dealing with, you know, tricky politics. This society within the Sidarian Empire is very stratified. So if you are poor, Darius, you know, in the book blurb mentions that his family is trying very hard to save up to send him to university. But even still, there's a low chance he's going to get in because there's a certain number of slots. And even undeserving rich kids are more likely to get in because their families are going to bribe the people they need to bribe to get them there. So that's going to be a huge theme throughout Darius's threads. Oramund is, as I mentioned, his father is an archmage, and he is raised from birth, assuming that he's going to go to university and then is going to become a powerful political figure somewhere in the empire. Things are going to go wrong both for Darius and Oramund, and they are not going to have their magic like they expect that they will, and that's where their paths are going to diverge from where things would be expected. And getting into the plot, that is basically the whole thing that will push those two, their threads. The other thing that's woven through the story and moves the plot forward is there is a mysterious set of attacks on mind mages. Also, all these mages have like a Latin-sounding name, like Mensa Morphis for Mensi for brain, right, for mind. But I'm just going to go with the much more easy to say one, right? So these mind mages are being kidnapped throughout the empire. The people that are protecting them and surrounding them are often found murdered with like their bodies appearing to be drained, all of their life and magical force drained out of them. Everything in the world has magic except for very few people. And that's going to, you know, be the important thing that sets off both Oramund and Darius on their paths. There are a whole bunch of other point of view characters as well. Imber is Ormond's best friend from when she's growing up, but she's going to be kind of evolved a little bit in a with his older brother as things move on. There's also Sorrel, who is kind of, I would say, looks like she's going to be the love interest of one of Ormond's brothers, but you know, there's nothing happening at the time. All of these characters are between 13 and, say, 17 or 18 during the main part of the storyline. So that thing with the mages is going to kind of be like our underlying thing that's going to be there all the time. It's going to set a bunch of the characters in the book on a certain storyline, and it's going to set them on an adventure, and they're going to be trying to find a family member who was kidnapped by the person that's taking these mind mages. Ormond has been off, doing an adventure where we get to kind of see the world because of him. Same with Darius. They're both the same age. They were both born as a star was actually going out, and that's important. I started to mention back when I was talking about the world that there's those six types of mages. Well, how you become one, everything from your genetics. It says the weather, whether it's hot or cold or stormy, can make a difference. But most important is what star is brightest or what star is in alignment right when you're born. And then on your 13th name day, exactly at the moment of your birth, you will go and you'll go to a mysterious place that will have all these stars moving around, and it will tell you what magic you're going to use. You can't use other forms. You have your one type of magic. More powerful you are, the more things you can do and things like that, like I said. Sorry to get out of line right there. I forgot to mention that. It's very important throughout the whole storyline. Even the people that don't have magic are because of a star winking out, going dead at the exact moment of their birth. So stars, everything, all very important. So getting into the bad, I have mentioned more than once that I don't like talking negatively about books, and I generally only like to do books that I like. In some ways, I am happy that this is the book that I'm going to talk more negatively about than positively, because my issues with the book don't have anything to do with the quality of writing, the storyline, and things like that. The author uses a couple of plot devices that I really don't like. Just their pet peeves of mine. I think one of them is one that I'll mention here in a minute that is more normal. I think that, a lot of people don't like one of the things I'm going to talk about, but far fewer people probably have an issue with the other one, and I'm willing to put that one all on me. Say, me, I'm the problem, it's me. And then I'll talk about a couple of other things that that are typical in the bad, and then I'll get into the good, because there is quite a bit of good as well. Like I said, this is a very well-written book with a great storyline. If you like world building, there's tons of world building, cool magic system. So, the bad. Number one, there are a ton of point of view characters. Ormond and Darius are the main two, but as I mentioned, there's Imber, there's Sorrel. One of Ormond's brothers has some point of view chapters. One of the archmages does. The person that administers the tests is in a couple. There's break periods, and where we kind of learn more of the history of things, or we get more into the plot, right? The murder mystery part of the plot. And they all have their own individual point of view characters. Our main bad guy who's very mysterious, first off, right, for most of the story. We only learn bits and pieces of him as it goes on. But the main bad guy has a chapter or two as well. I mean, there's between 8 and 10 point of view characters where that we see. That's a lot. It's very confusing at the beginning. Especially when combined with the second issue that I had, there's some time jumps, but I didn't feel like the time jumps were equal for everybody. So we have some of Darius's first point of view chapter. I believe he's 7, but I think that Ormond's, if I am remembering correctly, his first point of view chapter, he's already 13 and studying for his test that he's going to have. But his chapter is before Darius's, so that kind of confused me. And then the archmage, his first chapter is at the normal time, right, where something happens, but then he's going to go back 13 years to when that star winks out, him seeing that happen. That's going to kind of be a little bit of the world building for us, right? So I was very confused at the beginning because the time jumps weren't equal, And so that threw me off at first. I did, you know, get past that, and that's not really like a huge deal as it goes on, but it definitely, like, you know, took some going back to figure things out. Now, getting into the two things that are me-specific issues, first off, I don't like a character who makes stupid decisions that gets themselves into the trouble that they're in, right? That they don't like them, they're making rash decisions. Well, part of the problem with all these characters is they're all teenagers, like 13 years old, when like their main parts of their story start. Some of them are, you know, a little bit older than that, but like Ormond is going to make a huge life-changing decision after being depressed over, and you know, something that happens to him, and he runs off. And I mean, it does help us get our whole, you know, like big storyline going. It's great to move the plot forward, but I don't like it when characters get themselves into trouble and make stupid decisions because, you know, they're making rash ones where they don't like try to figure things out that are going on. And that's a problem with having teenagers, right? As your, you know, as 6 or 7 of the 10, 8 to 10 are teenagers. So my second one, and this one I'm going to, like I said, I would actually love, after I talk about this, for you guys to comment yourselves. I hate, absolutely hate any group or even an individual person that refuses to use their powers to help save themselves, right? Didn't like the Tuathuan in the traveling people in The Wheel of Time. I've read The Wheel of Time 6 times and listened on audiobook 3 more times. It's my favorite series of all time. But I hate the travelers, right? Them not wanting to fight back. It's just a thing that irritates me. I don't like it when characters have magical powers and they've hurt somebody and so they won't use their power or just, you know, won't use it to defend themselves. Well, the Ralawi, which is a group that, in theory, is super cool. They're, like, largely nocturnal. They're humans. They have got tattoos that are that they don't make. That they're just on their body, and they're supposed to signify, like, important things about them. They believe that their god and puts them there. They live in a super cool, like, tropical island. Loved the setting and loved Ormond going there to see them. But they refuse to harm anyone, even in self-defense. Now, you know, if they were off living on their own, then that's one thing. But they're supposed to be like pirates who are protecting people from slavers. But I'm not quite sure that I understand how they do that if they won't hurt people. They save somebody from a shipwreck, you know, during a storm. But they've been like following this ship. But if there hadn't been a shipwreck, would they have just let that ship sail off and sell the slaves? Like that seems to be their main thing that they do. So I'm really confused how they do it without violence ever. Like, or do they, you know, does, if there aren't any storms, do like 95% of the ships just sail off and sell people to slavery? They also get attacked at one point on their island, and they're basically like, it looks like they're all going to be sold into slavery by these, you know, mercenary people that are this group that, you know, sell slaves because they won't like fight back. Some of their kids even get killed because they won't fight. And there, as a general rule, because the Ralawi use a different type of magic and they live a very egalitarian lifestyle versus, you know, the other group, all of their people should be more powerful. They don't even need runes and things like that, right, to use their magic, but they're refusing to fight back against the pirates. I understand it's a plot device, you know, in this case, it's supposed to, you know, cause some issues for one of the characters, but I just hate it. I mean, it might be the number one thing I dislike more than anything else in all of fantasy, and that is a character or a group of people who won't use their power. I realize that that is, you know, all on me. A lot of people might like that. In fact, there was just a Reddit thread the other day that I was commenting on where someone's like, what, you know, what plot devices do you like or are your favorite things? And somebody mentioned that they like it when someone is afraid to use their power, right? Not me. If you have powers, I expect you to use them in a book, or I don't like the characters. In this case, I don't like an entire group of people who play a huge role in the book. So that all being said, the good. There's a lot of good in this. And if it weren't for those two, you know, things that I really had issues with the plot, you know, and that being like, you know, specific, possibly me things of not liking characters who do stupid things or doing care or characters who won't use their powers to protect themselves or the people they love. This book, the magic system is super cool. It kind of reminds me a little bit of like Reign and Ruin by J.D. Evan, right? That like it's broken down, it's stratified. I love a good classroom scene where we're being taught the magic along with the people. There are several of those scenes in the book. The world built, like the world feels huge. It feels alive. It's really awesome how varied the cultures are. We get to see at least a little bit of three of them in this one. I liked the issue that we have, like where, you know, we're supposed to have a druid council that in theory is, has equality, but, you know, there's rampant corruption and all kinds of bad things happening. You know, where one of the characters goes off and does his own thing based on that issue, right? People are still, you know, in danger of starving because they're not taught to use their magic. All kinds of things are done really well in this. The political system is pretty easy to understand. I loved the way that that was all described. So the world building is really good. I mean, it's top notch, just like the magic system is top notch. I like, you know, hard magic systems. I'm okay with there not being a hard magic system too. I'm not, someone that needs one way or the other. But this one, you know, my favorite though is to have those hard magic systems. And I really liked the way it was done. I mean, it was just cool the way they all traveled, the way they do things. And the magic's used in really cool ways even, you know, like energy mages can basically produce electricity. They have, ways to provide like shields and things like that because of using the magic to make lives better, right? You know, the mining system is because of mages and things like that. And the way like the social stratification exists also is a cool, I mean, also serves to move the story together. So basically, you know, if I just didn't have the specific issues I had, this is a really well-written book. I didn't have any problems getting through it, aside from just, you know, my rage at one specific scene in particular, and then making me sit there and think about the way the whole, one whole society even functions and how they've managed to exist to today. If you take that out, you know, this book, the writing itself, like I could see myself giving this like a 9 or a 10 for the way the writing quality, like how easily I got into that movie in my mind, and all that kind of stuff, which is why I also say that I wouldn't be at all surprised if the story ends up being, you know, somewhere in the top three, or I mean, I have a personal favorite already that's going to be, you know, one of my favorite books of the entire year, as I mentioned already, Daughter of the Beast. But you know, I could really see like 8 or 9 or maybe even all the judges deciding they really liked this book. So unless they have an issue like I do, I would be less surprised if I see it finish 2 than I would be if I even saw it finish 6 or 7, right? I guess I've kind of already got into like my own feelings on the book and my own thoughts, but all my issues are because of specific things the author does that I dislike as a general rule, versus me not thinking this is well written and me not thinking that the plot, the way it's set up and all that stuff isn't solid. This is a murder mystery kidnapping epic fantasy that really feels pretty epic. The magic system, like I said, is awesome. I like having everybody have magic. It's unfortunate a little bit that, you know, you have to use runes and things like that for the Sidarians to use their magic, but it makes a lot of sense, right, in terms of the way that the author did things, using the university to really learn all of these things. But, I mean, everybody possesses the capability. Some are clearly going to be stronger than others. Darius's mother is a life mage, and, like, she's only powerful enough to be able to, like, she makes poultices and things like that to help heal people, and they're more likely to work and do what they're supposed to do, right? Most of the, like, earth mages, for example, that are miners, are not able to like find, figure out where the ore is, but it helps them to do their mining and things like that. So generally, you know, all my issues are based on that. Now, getting into my rating, I think for, even though I've been, you know, fairly negative on this, I'm going to give it a 7 out of 10. All of my issues are plot devices as opposed to structural or anything like that. And one thing, like going back to my first review that I did, like of The Fall Is All There Is, I still actually think I liked this book better than that one now that I've, you know, that I'm going back. So maybe I'll have to revise The Fall There Is All There Is like to a 6.5 if I'm giving this one a 7. But still, you know, an average book. You know, even as I do this review, I hate all of the things that I've said and I feel terrible about it. I absolutely, it's pretty clear that even if someone was to tell me that research showed that if I, you know, did mostly negative reviews, that I would go to like 100,000 viewers and then continue to grow from there. If I would probably have to think long and hard before I no doubt in the end said yes, if I could somehow become a full-time YouTuber. But it would certainly not be something I would feel great about, even if I might do it. Once again, thank you for listening to this review. If you like my channel, please subscribe and hit like on this video. I will do all 10 of these Spiffbo books. This is number 5, and I look forward to finishing up. I'm currently reading book number 6, The Last Ranger by J.D. Rozelle. I'm enjoying it so far. I'm about a third of the way through. Wrapping things up, if you like the videos, like and subscribe. Going into this next month of November, it will be the last month that I read all new books. Next month is going to be like catching up on second and third books of a series that I've that I want to go forward on that I've already read this year. I'm also going to start once a month, as I've mentioned in just my last video, read a classic, whether or maybe like one that I've read 20 years ago, or some of the big names that I haven't read previously. This month will be a Terry Pratchett book. I thank some commenters both for that one and the one I'll be doing next month. If you have someone that you especially want me to review, then let me know and I'll buy that book and I'll do a review episode on it. Also, let me know if you have specific plot points that you dislike that make you not want to continue with the book or that knock some points off of a book for you. Thanks again. Hope you all enjoy the Spiffbo competition like I am. Thank you.